This is Business Impact, a podcast series from UCD College of Business, Ireland's leading business school. I'm your host, Emmett Oliver, and each episode I'll be joined by world-renowned faculty from across the College of Business, as well as international industry leaders who'll offer us insight, spark curiosity, and challenge you to rethink how you do business in a changing world. Now, you're welcome to another episode of Business Impact. It's great to have you along as we head into the very icy last part of the year. And boy, is it cold out there. It just suddenly seemed to come out of nowhere as we record in the middle of November. UCD campus, you can see lots of leaves around. It's got a certain atmosphere, but nevertheless, it is damn chilly. That's all I can say. You're very welcome along, and we're having a very topical conversation. It's great to get one at this time of the year when sometimes things can just... there can be a lack of pace, there could be a lack of momentum forward in terms of the kind of conversations we're having, but not this year. We have a wonderful guest today who is going to talk to us about a whole range of things in the technology sector, which is on everyone's lips at the moment. Obviously, there's AI, but there's a lot of other stuff going on as well. And my guest is a BCom UCD graduate to boot as well, so we'll get to talk to her a little bit about that too. And my guest is Fiona Kearney, who is the Chief Operations Officer at Microsoft EMEA. Fiona, you're very welcome along to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Emmett. Good to be here.
Yes, now you've had a very interesting career. Your current role is very interesting. We've mentioned your educational background, so we've got a lot to get through. So we have about 25 minutes to half an hour. So I'm hoping me and you, the two of us, can get through a lot of these different items, because I think a lot of our students, a lot of people who are UCD graduates, will be finding this conversation quite interesting as we move along. So Fiona, first of all, I know you are a UCD BCom graduate, so just tell us a little bit about your time doing the BCom and how it's shaped you and how it sent you on your journey to your career later on.
Oh, great memories from doing the BCom. It's quite a long time ago now. I think I was 93 to 96 in the BCom, Emmett. Look, just a super foundation, I would say. I started the BCom actually because my family is a big UCD family. My sister had done commerce, my other sister had done social science. And actually, a funny fact, my mom was doing an MBA at the same time as my sister was doing commerce. And back then, they were in the same class. So that was definitely one.
And they still get on to this day,
they
right?
They still get on to this day. And then my mom has had a long career history in UCD as well. So yeah, that was probably one of the reasons why I ended up going into commerce, because I had some history of it with the family. I actually ended up marrying somebody from BCom as well, Cameron. So we are together a long time and very happy. So it has been good for me in many ways, not only academically.
Tell me a little bit about even back, it is in the mid-90s, as you say, but even then, was there any interest in technology, or were you more like a mainline business kind of interest, or where were your interests lying at that particular point?
I think I was always more general business interest. I knew that I definitely was not interested in accountancy. It was the bane of my existence back then. And I was always a bit more interested in the kind of organization behavior, change, more the social side of commerce, really. But then I did do a master's. I did an MBS in MIS at the time. For those of you who remember John Mooney back in the day. And so that kind of pointed me a little bit more in the direction of technology and business integrated together.
Now, you've got a wonderful role at the moment, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, but you started with the consultancy world for two particular roles and two companies that would be well known. So tell us about those early years in consultancy, which obviously set you up well and probably gave you presumably a good taster of a whole load of disciplines and different areas of business.
Yeah, so I started off in KPMG and then I also worked in Accenture. And I think consulting is a really good grounding. I always say that to people, because you get to see just such a large range of industries, companies, functions. It's just phenomenal for kind of moving around. And so, you know, typically you're working on a kind of project basis with companies. I did a lot as I started in the world of process re-engineering back then, ERP system implementations. But I think the biggest factor in consulting is your ability to really learn how to do some of the what I call core skills, like facilitating large groups, working with senior executives, even when you're at a really early stage in your career, understanding project management, you know, just some of the basics that I really think have stood to me throughout all of the rest of the time in different industries.
Now, tell me if I'm wrong, but I know today you're involved in digital transformation. There you've just mentioned transformation in a different context in processing and so on at the early stage. Is there that kind of common thread between what you do nowadays and back then, or am I reaching too much in that one?
I think transformation as a team is everywhere, right? And companies and everyone we're working with is constantly trying to transform. So I do think it helps some of those core skills, particularly around things like change management, project management, seeing things through has definitely helped. But I think today we're in a, you know, a very different era of transformation when it comes to technology, as many of the listeners will know and probably work with, particularly in the kind of era of AI as we look at where we are today. But yeah, definitely some of those earlier skills are helpful no matter what kind of piece of work you're doing or what function or industry I found myself in.
Now, Fiona, a lot of our graduates and people who are just currently studying away as undergraduates, they'll be looking at entering the Big Four. It still has a massive enticement and an allure for a lot of them. But you then moved from that area into Microsoft, which even then was the Microsoft of today in terms of its influence and the scale of the company globally, you know, with Bill Gates and all of that. I mean, just tell us a little bit about your move from the consultancy world into Microsoft. What propelled you to make that move? And what had you thought of Microsoft before you got there? And was it as you thought?
I actually ended up working in Microsoft, and this is how things evolve, when I was a consultant. So I was in Accenture, and I ended up being in Microsoft. They were my client at the time. And so I really got to know the company quite well. I think I was there 3 or 4 years as a consultant before I moved in. So I think when you get to really be involved in a company, you're working in it with the teams from there, it was almost like homegrown. So the transition was actually a pretty easy one, Emma, to make. And I think it was also, you know, a decision that I wanted to be in industry, in one industry, in technology, and kind of grow my career there. So that was how I ended up moving in. But people can come in from all different places. You know, people are hired into technology. And one element that people often think you need to be very technical in order to work in technology, which is absolutely not the case. There's so many roles in technology companies today that are all about sales, marketing, go to market. You know, there's a ton of different things that you can do. So I would definitely say to people thinking about a move into technology that it isn't just about, you know, the development side and coding and product. It is actually, there's a ton of other opportunities and functions that people can look to move into. And particularly now, if we think about kind of the data center strategies that a lot of these big tech organizations are implementing, there's also a lot of really new roles that people can think about getting into. So it's open for a lot of different kind of backgrounds, careers, and people from different kind of academic sides as well.
Yeah, and I've noticed, like, you know, that old phrase, you know, don't get a job, get a career. So you've had a lot of different places you've worked within the company, you've had an ability to move around, you've obviously kept your skills relevant because you've sort of the segue between all those different roles. Has that been difficult, or was it just by accident or happenstance you moved between things, or how strategic did you have to be, or was it just you got lucky breaks at a certain period or things? Well, like, just give our listeners some idea of how you've moved between all those different roles, because you've had a lot of very, very interesting and varied jobs.
I think, first of all, when you're in a big company like Microsoft, there are so many opportunities. In any big company, you've got so many different geographies, functions, parts of the business that you can work in. And I'm always a big believer, you know, do a really good job at what you're working in at the time, and opportunities and doors will open. So that's definitely stood to me over the kind of close to 20 years that I've been there. I started in operations, so that was a really good grounding. And again, you can think structure, process, systems, tools, you know, how you run the backbone of a big organization. And I worked at the time a lot with all of our sales organizations, so ultimately supporting sales, which then became a natural backdrop to move into a more sales and marketing role as a COO. So in Microsoft, the chief operating officer role is really looking at how do we go to market? How do we think about our solution and product areas and bring them to market to our customers? It looks at sales operations. We have 10,000 sellers across our organization in EMEA. So how are we ensuring that we're running an efficient business in terms of supporting all of those sellers? If you think about it, every seller has to have a quota. They need to have accounts they're working on. You know, they need to have territories. So all of that needs to be run, and that falls within the role of a COO in Microsoft. And then, of course, you've got all of your kind of sales excellence, deal coaching, and marketing actually fits in here too. So really, really diverse set of functions that we run. I would say, has it been easy to move? I think there's a little bit of an intentionality that you need to have. Equally, I think there's always a lot of people who move across different functions. There's so much opportunity to kind of get to know what else is available and where you might fit. And a lot of the skills are actually transferable, particularly when you get to leadership levels in the organization. I think in the end of the day, you know, it is about networking. It's about making sure that you've got a good set of skills that you can bring in and actually doing something new. I think that's so important, like constantly learning, constantly thinking about what's going to give you a different challenge and, you know, just give you a new set of experiences. So that's definitely been something that I've thought about as I've moved around.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to go back to your early comment about being general business when you did your BCom and into consultancy and so on. Like, obviously, other people would have decided to go into a very select niche area. They might be, as you said earlier, in the technology, a particular part of that arena. But by keeping yourself broad, maybe that's been a big strength of yours. You're now in operations, where I presume you get drawn into all sorts of different things and very difficult technical disciplines and so on. So in a way, kind of keeping your doors open in skill set terms has probably been a strength, has it?
It definitely has. I mean, I would say it is always good to go deep in something, whether that's a function or whether that's a particular part of the business. It might be a solution area, product, etc. But I think as you get into your career, then it's always good to have those broader general management skills that can help you really be applied in a number of different areas. Because in the end of the day, and this is where I think some of my interest in coaching has come in over the time, it is all about people, right? I think we all recognize it is about the teams you have, how you build them, how you support people, how you help people grow. And so I think, you know, no matter what you do, as long as you've got a good team working with you, anything is possible, right? And everybody brings different capabilities and everybody brings different strengths and different areas that they're deep in. And I think it's just about mastering how do you get all of that to work together well that can really help you to be successful.
Now, Fiona, I suppose my listeners would be, one thing they definitely will want discussed is the whole world of AI at the moment. And Microsoft are right at the forefront of that. They've got a whole range of products. You've got Copilot. You've obviously got an investment in ChatGPT. OpenAI. There's a whole lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of noise around this area. There's champions of it. There's detractors. There's all sorts of things going on. So just give me your perspective. You're really at the sort of coalface in terms of the sales enablement piece. Just what's going on out there? What's the morale like? What's people's buy into this internally in the company? Just give us an idea of what's happening with AI from your personal perspective.
Look, there's so much going on around AI, I think, across the industry and in every industry. I think if it's the one thing that is on the agenda of every board across every industry right now. What I would say is, if I tried to maybe break it down, I think when we think about AI and the future of AI in the workplace and some of the bigger priorities there, there's probably three things, Emmett, that I would look at. The first is around how are we changing the workforce experience, so really enriching employees' experience, if you think of it like that. And that comes down to how is AI empowering people? And it's everything about the future of work. How are we working today? How can we make that more productive? Everybody will be familiar with Copilot, ChatGPT, and all of the various different large language models that are available these days. It's huge. And what it can do for people in terms of helping them in their day-to-day job, not necessarily taking over their jobs, but certainly adding a huge amount of productivity to what and how they work. That's probably one key area that is definitely going to evolve even more. And it's something that we are really learning every day. And there's a huge appetite for that in companies because they want to get that productivity boost. They want to have their people actually working on higher value add activities rather than a lot of maybe the more basic level tasks that you can actually have AI doing. So I think that's kind of one bucket, if you like. The second is really around innovation and how are companies using AI, whether it could be reducing their time to market, it might be improving their time to get prototypes and proof of concepts done, it might be thinking about new business models. It's not just about the efficiency, but it's actually about kind of how do they differentiate? And we talk about how they're bending the curve on innovation. And that's something that companies are obviously really interested in doing. They do that by spending quite a lot of time on that kind of space around envisioning. So what's the art of the possible with both technical architects, but also business architects to really envision in their industry what can be done differently. So a huge amount of work going on there across different industries to drive that innovation and get AI built into their own business models. And then I would say the last is around reinventing customer engagement. So think about retail. Think about some of the industries where there is a huge amount of customer engagement that might be in financial industries, in insurance, in call centers, in consumer, and huge opportunities here. And I think this is about how can you really use AI to enable hyper-personalized experiences. So much smarter interactions, better service at scale, and really thinking about how you can leverage agents. And people will hear a lot more about agents, AI-powered agents that can help customers in their journey and can then therefore help sales and help the entire experience. So there are probably three areas where we're thinking about AI, how we're applying it. And I think to your question, is the appetite there? Absolutely. I think people are still trying to figure out what they go after first, where they can get the most bang for their buck in terms of ROI impact, not just in hours and in productivity, but also obviously in bottom line dollar savings as well.
Yeah, you hear that a lot. I mean, obviously, I'd love to hear your perspective on this because you have a team in the field and so on who presumably feed back things and so on. A lot of companies want to make a move in AI, but they're very concerned that they make the right one and they don't have stranded assets or money going into the wrong areas or so on. So is that something you're getting back from your own colleagues that companies are, yes, they're excited, but they're sort of also nervous about they want to get this right because it can be expensive depending on how you scale up?
Definitely. I think companies are trying to go into this, but they're trying to do it with caution. And then they're also trying to do it with pace, because they know the environment is so competitive and there's so many people who are using AI as a competitive advantage. One thing you mentioned there, which I think is really important, and that is all around security, when we think particularly around technology, definitely something that customers are thinking deeply about, as they should, is the trust and the security aspect. So when you think about AI and as it becomes more pervasive, how are they actually safeguarding their data? How are they making sure that they've got this concept of responsible and ethical AI? How are they making sure that they are staying true to maybe some of the sovereign requirements that they might need to make that their customers are confident with? So this is all a huge part of when you're starting the AI journey, how are you ensuring all of that compliance security is in place? I think the other thing we hear about a lot from customers is also sustainability. So we really want to make sure that technology is helping organizations to be more sustainable. And that's a huge topic, as we know today, as it should be. So how are they reducing their carbon footprints? How are they operating responsibly? And that, again, is something really important that customers are thinking about. I think the last thing is just how can they move fast? Like, innovation is so rapid at the moment. It's changing every week, every month. And so how do they actually transform at speed? And I would just say one thing, Emmett, that is so critical to all of this, and it's part of some of the fear that we see, but it's also part of what's going to need to be in place to be successful, is the whole concept around skilling and upskilling of people. In the end of the day, whether that is people knowing how to, for example, engage with large language models, and you hear about this art of prompting, because ultimately, the more you learn how to engage with AI in the right way, and that is actually a learned skill, it's something everybody can do, the more you will get out of it. And then when you think about how we are leveraging AI in our operating models, there's a huge amount of skilling that people will need to do on security, on various aspects of AI as it gets rolled out. And maybe back to where we started, the whole element that is so important in all of this is change management. So actually, how are you going to help the organization transform? It doesn't just happen on its own. Sometimes it can be quite intuitive. You know, you see technology built into the workflow and your day-to-day kind of, you know, working agenda. But actually, a lot of it has to be done in a targeted way with the right change management in place, with people in place who can help train the trainers and all of that that comes with making sure you get a strong rollout.
And Fiona, do you think you do hear the kind of the cry going up that it, you know, the biggest danger here is job displacement of people to AI? Is that a fear you actually do hear out there in the marketplace, or has that been overcome in some way, or you know, over recent the first few months as you've rolled out there, first few years as you've rolled out these products, or do you still hear that? Obviously, some people listening into this will say, you know, this is all great to have, but I'm doing one of the tasks that might disappear. So what do you say to that point?
Look, is it still a fear? Of course it is. And I, you know, you especially hear it actually from folks that are early in career, maybe even people who are actually thinking about what they're going to study in college. They're wondering, you know, what is the best thing for me to study? Are some of these jobs going to be still around? You know, of course you hear all of that. I think the key thing here is it's not about necessarily elimination. I think it is about evolution and change of what people are spending their time on doing. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, and not to do a plug on Copilot, but it is one of the reasons why it's called a Copilot and not Pilot, right? It is about how can it support you and be there beside you. It's not about taking over the role. And I think that's the key element we need to think about. I think that roles and jobs will absolutely change. I think they will have a different nature. And I think that ultimately they will become a lot more intensive on thinking and solving problems versus necessary doing those maybe lower value add tasks that you can outsource. So it is about changing the nature of the roles as opposed to necessarily eliminating them. And I think that's why the skilling piece is so important. And people actually investing time in learning and understanding, hey, how might this change my job? What could it do to help improve certain things? That's got to be the mentality that I think people need to have.
Now, Fiona, because we've so little time, we probably could devote several, maybe 8, 9, 10 podcasts on what you've just been discussing. But let's move back more to the personal, which is always fascinating. I notice on your LinkedIn entry, you obviously have your current role and so on, but you talk about yourself as a coach and mentor, which I'm really interested in. You've done a lot of coaching, you've got a lot of training, and you've got a lot of qualifications in that area. So tell me about coaching. Why should someone do any coaching? What's so enjoyable about it? Just sell me the whole idea of coaching generally.
Coaching is essentially really helping people to help themselves, right? If you think about it in that way, I'm a strong believer that everybody has the answer themselves generally. And so a lot of it is about creating a space for people to think, a space for maybe teams to think. It might be individual, it might be with groups, and allowing people some time and maybe giving them some frameworks and approaches that they can leverage to come to their own conclusion on things. That's ultimately my very simplified way of thinking about coaching.
And tell me about this area, psychodynamics. What is psychodynamics? Because I know you've been sort of in that area and I think it sounds fascinating.
Look, there's a lot of different models of coaching. If you think about it, Emmett, there's, you know, cognitive based, so people will have heard about CBT. There's a number of different aspects to coaching. Psychodynamics is just one aspect of that. It's really around exploring the unconscious without getting too complicated. So it's really around trying to understand relational dynamics, maybe how past experiences might impact you in your current leadership role or in your team. It's around facilitating people for their own self-awareness. So how do you actually help people to recognize and manage potentially conflicts that are going on? And so really it is about getting to ultimately what is the unconscious that's showing up for people. And so when you use that in a coaching environment, it's really trying to help people to think a little bit and reflect on what might be going on that they haven't actually been aware of, and really giving them some space to do that.
Now, in your role, would you coach members of your team, or is that not the way you do it? Or is it people outside Microsoft? I'm just trying to get a sense of sort of when you get to deploy your own coaching skill set.
Yeah, of course, you use coaching on a daily basis with your team, right? Because you're constantly trying to understand how you can support them and how you can make sure that they, you know, reach the best potential. So yes, I would say informally. But I think if you're going to engage in coaching more formally, you would probably do it with somebody outside, you know, the organization. I think there's a whole world of amazing coaches in our environment who can be leveraged, but certainly it's a skill in its own right. And there's people who are full-time doing coaching as a career, as a very disciplined set of skills that they would use. So I would definitely advise people to go to a qualified coaches outside. But again, obviously, as a manager, people can use their coaching skills day to day as well.
Now, you're obviously got a huge team that you're in charge of, and that's probably the wrong word, but oversee the operation of that team as COO with Microsoft EMEA. So you've got people presumably from all sorts of different geographies, backgrounds, different fields, disciplines, etc. I mean, that must be a very enjoyable part of your job. But also, is it different to kind of coach and mentor them because they're all so diverse. You know, it's sort of like what works with somebody who's spent their life in Ireland is very different to someone who's German, Spanish, Brazilian, whatever. So you have to kind of be very sensitive culturally and so on. Is that one of the biggest challenges in your current role, that you've got that diverse multicultural team beside you? And it's wonderful to work with so many different people, but there's also challenges in that too.
Yeah, look, it's probably the most favourite aspect of the role for me. And it's definitely something that has kept me in such a big company over all the years. It's amazing. We have over 120 countries within Europe, Middle East and Africa. And my team is literally based everywhere from Dubai to Finland to Egypt to Sweden and everywhere in between. So it's really amazing to have a big melting pot of cultures and diversity that we work with every day. And yes, it also can be challenging, right? Because you're constantly trying to figure out how is business done in different parts of our world and our geographies. And it can be done very different in the Middle East to how, say, it might be done in Germany. And people's styles of working are quite different. You know, their backgrounds, their whole belief systems might be quite different. And so you're constantly trying to help make sure that you've got kind of everybody working together in the best way. Obviously, we are a large multinational organization, so people are very used to working with that level of diversity. But I do think it's also really important to make sure that there's a set of values as a company that everybody is following, right? Because no matter where people are from, they can all get grounded in, you know, what is the purpose of the organization? What's the common ground that everybody is trying to rally around, regardless of the geography or the culture or the background that they have? But yeah, I absolutely love that aspect of the role. How do we make sure that everybody is heard and included? And how do you even really, and again, this would be a separate podcast, how do you create an environment where people can work in a way that even if they are incredibly different, they're able to have themselves heard, be communicated in a clear way with each other, and kind of foster that inclusion? So I think that's a really interesting area.
Let's leave team motivation aside for a moment, because we're under huge time pressure, which is a good sign, by the way, in a podcast when the time has run out very quickly. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about, to be a bit of a futurologist, I mean, you're talking about coming into this whole area in the late 90s. I am same as myself, so I'm of the same vintage. So we've both seen sort of technology and business being completely overhauled and transformed. So looking in the next 10 years, and I know that I always feel slightly guilty asking this type of future-oriented question, but what do you see as the main things coming down the road for the technology industry? Is it, you know, being relevant to the enterprises you're working with? Is it that diversity question? Is it about, you know, kind of business success? Well, what is the thing you would sort of pick out for the industry? Where are the challenges, or what's it going to look like? Have you any reflections on that area?
So look, I think it's a little bit back to some of the things that I mentioned earlier, actually, Emmett. As we think about the future, there's going to be so much innovation coming, and it's happening every day. There is different business models coming out. There is different ways of how people are going to market. There is partnerships that are coming together. People are going to have to be so nimble and agile and quick. And so I think, how are customers getting together to really think intentionally about where they want to use AI? Which parts of their business can it be most useful in, as a kind of a phased approach, is really important. And underlying all of that is, how are they going to do that in a secure way? So I think that's probably a key thing for companies and how they're thinking about things today. I think the second thing is also thinking a little bit about the policy landscape. When we think about the geopolitical landscape we have, and a lot of the new policies that are coming in, whether that's the EU AI Data Act, whether it's various different sovereign policies that are coming in, companies really need to think about, where is their data being held? How are they managing in a multinational environment to do that in the right way against policy that might be coming out in their organization and in their country? So that's a big piece. But ultimately, I think this is all going to be about speed. Back to the point I made on how adaptable companies can be. How are they doing an agile approach to innovation? How are they really thinking about their talent and the workforce that they need? How are they thinking about all of the new models that are coming out and making sure that they can leverage those without actually leaving people behind? I think they're going to be some of the critical things that organizations need to think about.
Fiona, it's been a wonderful conversation. We've covered a lot. As I said, we don't have enough minutes to get through. This is a complex area. There's a lot of moving parts in it all, but I think we've made a decent stab and a decent start of it. Well done on your career. Continued success in that area. So that is Fiona Kearney, who is the Chief Operations Officer at Microsoft EMEA. Thank you for coming on Business Impact.
Thanks for having me.
Now, if you enjoyed this week's episode of the UCD Business Impact Podcast, please subscribe to episodes on Apple Podcast or Spotify. We cover a broad range of topics with insights from business leaders around the world, so there's sure to be something there for everyone. I'd like to thank our production team of Beth Gormley and Mike Liffey. They work tirelessly in the background, sourcing interviewees, editing, promoting episodes, and everything in between. I've been your host, Emmett Oliver, and we hope you can join us next time on UCD Business Impact.